This is the World Cafe, and we're celebrating the 20th anniversary of the World Cafe throughout the month of October, digging up the best of our archived interviews. Today, we'll spend a very insightful hour with the incomparable Roseanne Cash. Cash began releasing albums in 1979 and had a breakthrough with 1981's 7-Year Ache. In 2006, Roseanne released one of her most personal albums, Black Cadillac. The songs were written as she was trying to find her way through a period of great personal loss. In the space of 2 years, she experienced the deaths of her beloved father, her stepmom, June Carter Cash, and her mother and Johnny's first wife, Vivian Liberto. The result was some immensely powerful music. When she stopped by in 2006 after a concert at World Cafe Live, I asked Roseanne about what happened.
I mean, it was unfortunate and a bit overwhelming to lose three parents in such a short period, but, you know, this is, I'm certainly not in a unique position. And in fact, I don't have any friends who aren't going through this in some way or another. You know, it's our generation.
Absolutely. When was the point when you were able to turn the grief you were going through into decide that, well, now I'm going to make art out of this?
I don't know that it was ever it was a conscious decision about 3 months after my dad died that this was what we used to call a concept record, because
right.
I had written half the songs by then, and I saw that this was a single-themed record. But the song Black Cadillac I wrote 6 weeks before June died, so that song was the first song in the cycle, and it was prescient, you know, it was kind of a foreboding. And then I wrote another that summer, and then my dad died in September, and I wrote three songs in very quick succession and then realized that it was a thematic piece.
Well, there are two images that are really strong, obviously the title image, the roses, and that Cadillac.
Mm-hmm.
Let's listen to Goddess in the Roses
Okay. First.
And where does that imagery come from?
That was the first song I wrote after my dad died. And, you know, I was just in that raw state of grief. And I just woke up in the middle of the night with that idea that you could find God, or whatever your idea of God is, in sorrow as well as in joy.
Mm. It's a beautiful song. This is Goddess in the Roses.
God is in the roses, the petals and the thorns, storms out on the oceans, the souls who will be born, and every drop of rain that falls, falls for those who mourn. God is in the roses and the thorns. The sun is on the cemetery, leaves are on the stones. There never was a place on earth that felt so much like home. We're falling like the velvet petals, we're bleeding and we're torn. But God is in the roses and the thorns. I love you like a brother, a father and a son. It may not last forever, ever,
it never will be done. My whole world fits inside the moment I saw you be reborn. But God is in the roses, and that day was filled with roses. God is in the roses and the thorns.
Listen, Cash is our guest, and that is a performance with, have to mention right up front, co-producer of the album, John Leventhal, who's who's Mr. Roseanne Cash playing guitar today. Some of the historical pieces in here that might need some explanations for people, one of them would be the song Radio Operator.
Yeah. My dad was a radio operator in the Air Force in 1954. This was before my parents were married, and he intercepted Russian signals, you know, and tried to translate them. And he always said that's why his ears were so good, because he spent so much time with headphones on listening for these signals. So I imagined that, and he was writing letters to my mother, who was the girl from San Antone. And I was just imagining a time before they met, and that I was a gleam on the horizon, and then a time after they're both gone, and maybe they're still sending signals back to us.
This is Radio Operator.
Radio Operator, in a tiny foreign room, we can hear you now and later, calling out and coming through. Radio Operator, you're a boy so far from home, with a signal like a heartbeat, not afraid but so alone. Where are the messages for me? The secret code, the parts unknown. I'll ride the signal to the world and to the girl in San Antone. Radio Operator, do you ever think of me? 'Cause I'm a gleam on some horizon, just too far away to see. Radio Operator, I am calling like a friend from the future, from the present, and it never has to end. Where are the messages for me? The secret code, the parts unknown. I'll ride the signal to the world and to the girl in San Antone. Still messages to send from the future, from your memory, and it never has to end. This message will not end.
Radio Operator, another one of the new songs from Roseanne Cash on Black Cadillac. We're getting a chance to talk with her about the songs today. That song is a great example of something that happens, which must have been part of your process of coming to terms with death, is that songs appear before you were born. Songs happen. Communication happens after people have died. Next generations fit in. There's even a song that goes back to the
17th century.
Yeah. That's a really wonderful concept of continuity.
Well, that was very comforting to me, to try to fit myself into a place, a linear kind of picture that was much bigger than just my little spot in time, you know, what survives these hundreds of years. And, you know, the thing I came up with that I think survives is love. And that a relationship founded on love doesn't end when one person leaves the body, but particularly parent and child, you know, that those relationships have to go on some way. Hmm. I'm the only one talking right now, and the terms are being renegotiated, but the relationship goes on.
How have your kids dealt with all this?
My kids have been phenomenal. They've actually been a tremendous area of support for me. And I'm aware that as I'm going through grief and losing my parents, that I'm also teaching them about when they are going to lose me, you know, that there's a continuum happening.
I think of just pictures of at least one of the Cash family homes. And I'm thinking about any of us, when our parents die, we have to clean out the family homes.
Oh, boy.
How can you possibly deal with that? That must be...
That was very, very painful, the realization that when you lose your parents, you lose your childhood homes. And, you know, with my dad in June, it was very complicated because the estates and the amount of properties and, you know, everything involved with that.
Was he a pack rat or was she?
June was, yeah. But, you know, they also had a lot of homes and a lot of belongings, and they had designated that a lot of it went to Sotheby's. So it was painful. Mm. And I also, in House on the Lake, got to that point of trying to find out, well, what survives this? If you lose all of these tangible artifacts of their lives, what are you left with? Well, you're left with love and memories.
Let's listen to House on the Lake.
I miss the sounds of Tennessee and the smell of heavy rain. The roses in the garden, the life before the pain. But I hear his voice close in my ear. I see her smile. I blink and while my eyes are closed, they both have gone away. There's nothing left to take. Love and years are not for sale in our old house on the lake. Well, I'm going down to New Orleans, 'cause we both are sinking fast. And I'll stare into a bourbon moon and see how long we last. But I hear his voice I follow down the velvet undertow, back to the place where I was born, back to my southern home, the blue bedroom, the wood and nails. Now there's nothing left to take but love and years, and not for sale. In our old house on the lake, in our old house on the lake, in our old house.
House on the Lake by Roseanne Cash, recorded in front of an audience at World Cafe Live in 2006. More from this interview with Roseanne after the break. She talks about whether she felt limited in trying to express the pain of her parents' death in a pop song. That's coming up on this 20th anniversary edition of the World Cafe. I'm David Dye for our 20th anniversary edition of the World Cafe. Today, we're exploring some of the most moving work put out by singer Roseanne Cash. The songs on her 2006 album Black Cadillac came out of the deaths of her superstar father, Johnny Cash, stepmom, June Carter Cash, and her mom, Cash's first wife, Vivian Liberto. All three passed away within a two-year period.
I was thinking about what you do. You're a songwriter, and here you go through this simple and very profound thing that you've gone through. It's simple because we all go through right. It, but its profundity just keeps speaking. And your art form is popular song, which is such a proscribed form. You got to have a certain number of verses. You got to have a hooky chorus. You got to, and you're interested in that aspect of your art too. You want this to get out there. Did you feel limited by the form at any point?
No, I didn't. In fact, the form itself brought me a tremendous amount of solace, because when something feels unmanageable and overwhelming, that amount of emotional content in your life, and I'm a songwriter and I have a structure that I could bring to that, a sense of poetry, sense of discipline, focus, a rhyme scheme, you know, a verse, a chorus,
mm-hmm.
that was so useful to me. It made things feel manageable. And a lot of times in the midst of the confusion and grief, I would start writing and something would be revealed or something would come clear. Something would kind of click into place. Some days, you know, I had a lot of faith and some days I had no faith. And to write it all out was helpful.
Mm-hmm.
To give each one of them equal weight. Not go, okay, well, let me just get through this dark period and so I can get to the light stuff. No, but to give the dark stuff equal weight, because it's just as human.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to play Black Cadillac here, or at least hear it, because here you do a live version of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because in terms of song form and all that, this one stands out in a lot of ways. And it was, as you've expressed, you wrote this way early in the
way early, right?
Yeah.
The lyrically, it's a little bitter, you know. I mean, I was anticipating the public takeover of grief about my dad, my stepmother, and that was. I was really dreading that, you know. I felt like I had to share my father my whole life. I didn't want to share him in death. So there's a little bitterness in the songs. They're not all this bitter. But when we recorded it, when I recorded it with Bill Bottrell, as it started unfolding, the arrangement and the approach to the song, I started thinking about The Doors, Riders on the Storm,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of eerie, you know, ambient thing. So we brought a bit of that to it with more aggression.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And
that's an interesting way to put it. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, of course, none of that's on this. This is the acoustic,
yeah, this is different.
Acoustic version of it, of Black Cadillac.
One, two. One, two.
It was a black Cadillac that drove you away. Everybody's talking, but they don't have much to say. It was a black sky that rained, none of it fell. One of us gets to go to heaven, one has to stay in hell. Now it's a lonely world, I guess it always was. Minus you, minus blood, my blood. It was a black Cadillac, like one you used to drive. You were always rolling, but those wheels burn up your life. Oh, it's a black heart of pain that I'm wearing, it suits me just fine. There was nothing I could do for you when you were still alive. Yeah, it's a lonely world, just a numbers game. 100 years will find me feeling just the same. Yeah, it's a lonely world, I guess it always was. Minus blood, my blood.
Black Cadillac, which is one, as Roseanne Cash stated, of the songs that ended up being produced by one of two people that worked on this album. John Leventhal worked with you on it, and so did Bill Bottrell. And you did a performance of one of the songs that Bill Bottrell produced called The World Unseen, mm-hmm. which knocks me out. I just love this song. It's not one of the big shiny single type songs on here, but it's a gorgeous, gorgeous song. And how did it fit in? How did it get written?
It's interesting that you dialed in on that song, because that song is really important to me. To me, it's the centerpiece of the record.
Mm.
And just personally, it's really important. It's kind of almost a manifesto for me, but it's so quiet that a lot of people miss it. That was also written shortly after my dad died. I started writing it, and I was thinking about finding the people you love in the artifacts they leave behind, and in their geography, and in their habits, in their strengths and weaknesses, and, you know, are they there? Just that searching. And I went to Christmas Eve services that year. He died in September. I took my kids to Christmas Eve services at the Episcopal Church in New York. And they sang that old song, old hymn, We Three Kings of Orient Are. And they got to that line, westward leading, still proceeding. And I felt like somebody hit me with a 2x4. I wrote it on the program, that line, and I went home and I just inserted it in the song. And it was so profound to me, the realization that well, we're all headed in this direction. Some of us get there sooner than others, but, you know, death is not for the chosen few. We're all going there. And maybe there's a whole world beyond this one that we don't see, the world unseen.
How did your relationship with faith move in and out during this period? Because there's songs here about I don't believe, and there's right. songs, very strong ones.
But that's really human, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Some days you believe, some days you don't. I really don't trust people who don't have any cracks in their faith and who say they know, you know. I don't know. I believe some things, and some days. I like what St. Thomas of Aquinas said. He said, I believe, help me with my unbelief. So at very dark moments, I had absolutely no faith. And in brighter moments, I had a lot.
Well, let's listen to this song. It's a beautiful one. It's The World Unseen.
I'm a sparrow on the roof. I'm the least of everyone I have to lose. I'm the rainbow in the dirt. And I am who I was and how much I can. So I will look for you in the stories of the kings, westward leading, still proceeding to the world unseen. Thank you.
The World Unseen, another performance from our guest, Roseanne Cash. There's a lot of songs on, a lot of great songs. When have you come to terms with this album? Have you figured out? I mean, I think it's right up there with Interiors and some of your real best work. I mean, it's just.
I feel it's up there with my best work, too. I'm still in it. I don't have a lot of perspective or detachment from it, rather. I still feel really close to the songs. There's still the emotional backstory is still very much a part of my life.
It's still happening.
Yeah, it's still happening.
Wow. You did a performance of 7 Year Ache. Are you in touch with that person who wrote that song? I mean, the things that go on in that song, I was listening to you do it, and I was listening to the profundities of the other songs you have, and I started saying, boy, have we all changed.
Yeah. Yeah, I grew up. You know what I feel about that song? I feel about it as I would a song my daughter had written. I was so young when I wrote that song. I was 23. And it's come back around to being meaningful to me in a whole different way. It's like singing a song my kid wrote.
7 Year Ache.
All right.
See, now they recognize it.
You act like you were just born tonight, face down in the memory, but feeling all right. So who does your past belong to today? Baby, you don't say nothing when you're feeling this way. The girls in the bar singing, who is this guy? They don't think nothing when they're telling you lies. And you look so careless when they're shooting that ball. Do you know heartaches are heroes when their pockets are full? The 7 year ache. See what else your old heart can take. Boy, say, when is he gonna give us some room? The girl say, God, I hope he comes back soon. Talkings, you don't hear a thing. You're still uptown on your downhill stream. The boulevard's empty, why don't you come around? Baby, what is so great about sleeping downtown? There's plenty of dives to be someone you're not. Just say you're looking for something you might have forgot. And don't bother calling to say you're leaving alone. There's a fool on every corner when you're trying to get home. So tell her you're trying to kill the 7 year ache. See what else your old heart can take. The boy say, when is he gonna give us a room? The girl say, God, I hope he comes back soon. Just tell her you're trying to kill the 7 year ache. See what else your old heart can take. Boy say, when is he gonna give us some room? The girl say, God, I hope he comes back soon.
Seven-Year Ache by Roseanne Cash. That was recorded in front of an audience at World Cafe Live in 2006, shortly after Cash released her Black Cadillac album. After the break, our most recent interview with Cash, her 2009 album The List, was another labor of love inspired by her famed father. She shares the story of that record in a moment on this 20th anniversary edition of the World Cafe. To close out this 20th anniversary hour here on the World Cafe with Roseanne Cash, we turn to her most recent visit to the show back in 2009, just after she released The List. That album was based on a list of 100 essential country songs that her father, Johnny Cash, had given her. When Roseanne and her husband, producer John Leventhal, stopped by the studio after a concert at World Cafe Live, I asked Roseanne about the circumstances under which she received The List. I'd heard that she just graduated high school.
I had, and literally the day after high school, I went on the road with my dad. He just said, come with me and we'll travel around. And it was very appealing as an adventure. And it was that summer on the road with him that that I think I decided I wanted to be a songwriter. There was this kind of critical mass musical moment in my life that summer where he gave me The List. Helen Carter was teaching me how to play guitar and teaching me the Carter Family songs, and I thought, this is an honorable profession. And he gave me The List because we were sitting on the bus talking about songs, and he mentioned several songs that I didn't know. And he said he got kind of alarmed, and he spent the rest of an afternoon making this list for me. He called it 100 Essential Country Songs. And when he gave it to me, he said, this is your education.
Now, what music had you, obviously you've been exposed to a lot of music, but what, you know, here you are, teenager, what were you into at the time yourself?
Well, I was a Beatles freak, you know, as a pre-adolescent, I was president of my Beatles fan club. And I grew up in Southern California, and, you know, I listened to it was kind of pre and post Woodstock era, so I was listening to Buffalo Springfield and Elton John and Spencer Davis and Janis Joplin, everything, you know, the late 60s, mid to late 60s, all the great bands then. So it's not only that. I mean, my mother was listening to Ray Charles and Marty Robbins, so that kind of went in, you know, by osmosis as well as my dad's music, of course. But I didn't choose country music then.
Mm-hmm. And so here you get this list, and did you know any of the songs at the time?
Oh, sure. You know, I mean, I couldn't have grown up without knowing Long Black Veil or Take These Chains From My Heart. You know, those kind of just were in the air around me. But there were a lot I didn't know. And, you know, it's this list has revealed itself over time to have so much depth and really chart the evolution of American roots music. You know, it wasn't strictly country. It was all the feeders into country music, too. Southern blues and gospel and early folk songs, Appalachian songs. It was a father's list, but it was also a musicologist's list.
I was just thinking about how amazing it is nowadays to make a list like this. You could Google all this stuff or whatever. Yeah. And he did this in an afternoon off the top of his head.
He did not Google. Yeah. You know, people express surprise about that. That's kind of the least surprising thing to me because he had all of these songs at his fingertips. He knew literally thousands of songs by heart. So he just embodied them. They were like breathing to him.
Well, you know, here you have this 100 songs, and how did the idea for you and John to tackle this as a project come about?
This was really John's idea. I don't think I would have had the confidence or the courage to come up with this idea on my own. But in 2005, I found the list again. I had, you know, forgotten about it, put it in a box of letters and forgotten. And I had this new album out, Black Cadillac. And I was writing narratives for the Black Cadillac show because we had these films in the middle of the show. And so the second narrative I wrote was about the list because I had just found it again. So I wrote this thing, you know, when I was 18 years old, my father made for me a list of 100 essential songs. So that was in this little film in the middle of the Black Cadillac show. Well, everybody started coming up to me after the show saying, well, what about this list? You know, what else is on the list? When are you going to record the list? It was just absurd. And I wanted to make a covers record. And John said, you know, if you're going to make a covers record, the only record to make is The List. I said, no, I wouldn't want people to think I was exploiting my dad. He said, it's not about your dad. It's your list. and it started to sink in. Well, do you want to weigh in on that, John?
Yeah. No. I was going to ask John about, okay, here you have this idea to do this, but the aesthetics of doing this is something that comes between the two of you, with John, you know, working as a producer and musical hand on this. And you have to consider your background, Roseanne. You know, born in the South, grew up in Southern California, spent time in Nashville, but now you're a New Yorker. How do you consider all those elements, John, when you're getting ready to figure out what to do with these songs?
Well, you know, I like a challenge like that, David. It's the kind of challenge I really thrive on. So, having lived with Roseanne for 17 years, I mean, I've always, you know, been aware of this other side of her as a singer, separate from, you know, her being an artist or a songwriter necessarily. And I always intuitively felt she was made to sing material like this, and in some ways that she sort of avoided doing it. It's probably a long, complicated conversation as to why. But
yeah.
She avoided doing some stuff that I thought was naturally in which she had natural strengths. I thought this was a great idea. It was like a gift, you know? It was like a gift from her dad. He gave her the list, and these are great songs, deeply soulful songs with a lot of resonance. And the challenge, of course, was, well, how do you do it and have it be fresh? Because there's nothing less interesting than doing a covers record of well-known tunes where it's just boring, or are you trying to duplicate the original?
We've got a version that you and John did at World Cafe Live of I'm Moving On. And before we do that, let's listen to the Hank Snow version of that one.
That big eight-wheeler rolling down the track means your true-loving daddy ain't coming back, 'cause I'm moving on, I'll soon be gone. You are flying too high for my little old sky, so I'm moving on. That big loud whistle as it blew and blew said hello to the Southland, we're coming to you, and we're moving on. Oh, hear my song. You had the laugh on me, so I've set you free, and I'm moving on.
Some songs are so iconic that even the breaks in them are really
yeah.
well known. Now, that's what I call kind of a jukebox song. You would find that on every jukebox anywhere for years and years and years, and I guess Hank Snow's career kind of rested in many ways on that song. Now, John, how did you react to that version of it when you were doing it with Roseanne?
You know, it's interesting. This was the song that was the key into the album for me, of how to sort of approach this, was how I sort of thought about deconstructing that. Because it was clear to me that we weren't going to kind of do it like Hank Snow, and we weren't going to do it with that language, with that kind of honky-tonk and, you know, real hillbilly fiddle stuff, which we love. I mean, I love all that stuff, but, you know, I just didn't feel the need for yet another version of it like that. So the big insight was sort of deconstructing it a little bit and thinking about Rose, who's so sexy to me. I just thought, well, that could be a sexy song. So the big insight was, well, you know, what if we did it like Peggy Lee's Fever?
I didn't get it at first.
So that's kind of the way I'm wired. I can't help it. I'm like a walking encyclopedia of a gazillion songs. And so a lot of times my wiring will cross the songs to see what happens. And that worked. I mean, literally within 3 seconds of that idea hitting my head, I was like, well, that works. Because it's basically just a blues. And then when she started singing it, I was like, oh, yeah, we're on to something here. So that really was the key into the album.
And Roseanne, you weren't so sure?
Well, I wasn't sure because of Hank's version. I thought, this doesn't make sense for a woman to sing. It just, you know, it's to sing Big Eight-Wheeler Rolling Down the Track. I have to do it either ironic or just completely deconstruct it, like John said.
No irony. We didn't want it. It's so easy to do this stuff and be ironic.
Yeah,
but
we really
didn't. I was like, we love this stuff.
We love it. We cannot be ironic.
I don't want to make fun of it.
Right.
It's like,
so when he came up with this very sexy Peggy Lee thing, I thought, oh, okay, We could do that.
And plus, it forced her. I think it also was sort of, she realized that I wasn't fooling around. It was like, no, you're going to be the singer. You are the singer. Get in front of the band and you are singing and forget about your own tunes. And it's all about you as a singer. Because Roseanne has never really framed any recording project she's done in her 30-year career as that. It's like, well, I'm the singer.
No, I never did.
And that was really my goal. My goal for this album, David, was if people listened to it when they were done listening, if the first thought they had in their head was, God, I forgot about what a great singer Roseanne was, then I feel like I've done my job. And it seems like I may have just done exactly that.
Well, let's listen to a great singer. And the live version here certainly has all those elements you're talking about.
Big eight wheeler rolling down the track means your true love and mama ain't coming back. Cause I'm moving on, I'm rolling on. You were flying too high for my little sky, so I'm moving on. Big loud whistle as blue and blue said hello to the Southland, we're coming for you. When we're moving on, I'll soon be gone. You had the laugh on me and I'll set you free, and I'm moving on. Moving on, John. Baby, from time to time, but you just wouldn't listen or pay me no mind. So I'm moving on, I'm rolling on. You've broken your vow and it's all over now, and I'm moving on. Well, someday, baby, when had you play, you're gonna want your mama, but your mama will say, keep moving on, stay away too long. You had the laugh on me and I've set you free, and I'm moving on, moving once more. Big eight wheeler rolling down the track means your true love and mama ain't coming back. Cause I'm moving on, I'm rolling on. You were flying too high for my little sky, so I'm moving on, moving on. Moving on home.
I'm Moving On, performed by Roseanne Cash and John Leventhal. That was recorded in front of an audience at World Cafe Live in 2009, shortly after Cash released the list.